This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Well, as we've been hearing this morning, a police officer and three others have died in a terrorist attack outside the Houses of Parliament in Westminster in London. And the attacker was also shot dead by police. The terrorist rammed his car through a crowd of pedestrians past the checkpoint and murdered a police officer with a knife. Professor Greg Barton is the chair in Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University. He's a global terrorism expert. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Yeah. Do we know who's actually responsible for last night's terror attack in London?
We don't, but it's almost certain that London authorities do. And of course, their priority at the moment is to try and capture any associates. There's a possibility other attacks are planned. That doesn't seem likely. But in any case, I want to capture his associates and try and fully deal with this threat before they go public any more than they have to. It looks like it could be ISIS. It fits their pattern of the last 3 years calling for lone wolf attacks. They're calling for people to use their cars, use their knives to kill strangers. But of course, AQAP pioneered that methodology. Back in May 2013, we had the killing of Lee Rigby by Michael Adebalaja, who ran him over with his car and cut his throat and filmed it. So that's a possibility as well. We'll, I think, be hearing about this in the next 24 hours, but right now, I'm police focused on trying to round up anyone who had any connection.
Can you put this in context for us? When was the last terrorist attack in London, and how does it fit in the broader European context of what's been happening?
Well, the story in the UK has been remarkable in that you had the 7/7 attacks, the 7th of July attacks of 2005 on the tube and bus system in London. And since then, there have been many, many attacks that have been thwarted, but none succeeded. There have been larger attacks, attacks to use liquid explosive devices on flights out of London, quite complicated, ambitious attacks. We had that attack in Woolwich that I mentioned, May 2013, the killing of Lee Rigby, in response to an article in AQAP's Inspire magazine trying to provoke a crowd response. It seems to be the sort of thing we're dealing with here. So it's only been those sort of lone wolf attacks that have broken through, and they are, of course, ultimately impossible to completely safeguard against because of their very nature. But the more ambitious attacks, the British authorities have been very effective in shutting down quite well-advanced plots and quite sophisticated plots before they could be executed. So that's the good news. The flip side is that there's no such thing as an absolutely perfect score in this business. And it's the lone wolf attacks that are the most hard to defeat.
So can we expect to see more of those kinds of attacks then, those low-tech lone wolf attacks?
I think we've got to plan for them just because that is the low-hanging fruit that's available to terror networks. It's what they can do. So if they can't execute a sophisticated mass casualty attack, they will, as it were, settle for something more modest if it means that they keep themselves in the game. Now, it may well be it was AQAP who pioneered plastic explosives, PECN plastic explosives, who are in the frame for the laptop flight ban. It may well be that they have responded by putting a call out for lone wolf attacks to show themselves more potent, even though, of course, Islamic State's the prime candidate. But these groups are innovative, they're flexible, and they're quite prepared to adapt and go with whatever opportunities present themselves. All terror groups would like to have mass casualty events, but if they can't do that, they'll go for something more low-tech. Having said that, the attack in Nice with a truck, of course, was both low-tech and mass casualty. So that's the really scary possibility. We didn't see it in London, thankfully, but it could just as well happen in London as well.
Yeah, is this something that we could see happening in Australia then?
Yes, there's nothing to prevent somebody commandeering a truck, or renting one for that matter, or a bus or another heavy vehicle and ploughing into pedestrians. So, you know, we've got to think about how we can minimise that risk and close off as far as we can the opportunities to them, but there's nothing to stop it happening in Australia. We can be more confident about prohibiting or stopping assault rifles and access to explosive material, but low-tech attacks are very hard to stop.
Well, so I was wondering what kind of counter-terrorism strategies would be effective against that kind of thing?
Well, a lot of it has to do with passive security. So we've already been living for many years now with bollards or concrete structures or steel poles or some other kind of perimeter security. Our concern when these things were first introduced, of course, was vehicle-borne improvised explosive devices of the sort we see so frequently used in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq and Syria. But now, of course, the concern is that the vehicle itself may be the explosive device, the weapon, just the kinetic energy of a heavy vehicle creating into a crowd. Mm. So by putting in place things that make it harder for somebody to do that, you know, that wasn't the case with the Nice Boulevard back on Bastille Day last July. There's been a lot of thought put into that. That, you know, closes off some enticing opportunities for terrorists, but it doesn't eliminate everything. You just can't do that.
No.
Too many possibilities.
Mm. Do you think that ISIS will remain a threat to the West in the long term?
I think we've got to be realistic. I mean, we shouldn't be paranoid and we shouldn't exaggerate their potency. They are very much on the back foot and they very much are being defeated on the ground in Iraq and Syria. But, you know, Al-Qaeda was almost completely destroyed after the 9/11 attacks and the response that followed. They wanted that response. That was part of their whole game plan was to provoke responses that ultimately worked in their favour. They lost most of their fighters. But right now, Al-Qaeda is as strong as they've ever been. They're still around. They're still influential. Their affiliates like FUAP are some of the most formidable groups that we're facing. And they haven't gone away. So, you know, this is after literally trillions of dollars in military operations against them that have had an enormous success, but not complete success. And that's the reality. So once ISIS is gone on the ground in Iraq and Syria, at least in the big cities, it's likely there'll be either a successor or some altered form of ISIS around for decades to come.
So you can't retire yet, Greg. I think we still need you.
Look, it would be lovely if we lived in a world where we could focus on things like health and sanitation and democracy and positive things rather than put so many resources into counter-terrorism. But the reality is we do have these real threats, not so much for us in Australia, more so for people living in the global south, the Middle East, North Africa. The trick is to try and make sure that whatever we do there or here in Australia, we do in a way that actually makes society better and doesn't actually erode the things that we are fighting to preserve.
Mm, yeah. Thanks so much, Greg. Thanks for your time this morning.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
I hope we don't have to speak again soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you.
Yeah, that's Professor Greg Barton, a terrorism expert and chair of Global Islamic Studies at Deakin University.